Welcome to Haint Podcast. We talk about the ghosts of the past, look to the spirit of the future. Hey, Jessica.
Hey, Hannah.
How are you?
I'm in a crisis.
A crisis?
A crisis. Adulthood crisis.
An adulthood crisis. What happened to Hot Girl Summer?
It's been absolutely derailed.
Okay, so we've hit a pause.
Yeah.
Jessica, tell us what happened.
Okay, picture it. I'm outside.
Okay.
I'm trying to do yard work.
Your little yard.
I am a renter, so I had to wait for a very long time for the rickety-ass deck that used to be in the yard to be dismantled.
That was a hazard.
Mm-hmm. To us all, really.
I mean, I stood on that thing last week and I heard a crack.
Yeah.
So.
So I went out so that I would not fall in the holes where the posts were, because they quite literally just took the deck out and left.
Oh. So you were trying to prevent a fall.
Yeah.
Did you know I was sitting out in your yard just like 2 seconds ago, admiring how the person who took the deck out took the time to fill in the holes?
Thank you. it was me.
I had so much respect for that. Anyway, you were trying to prevent a fall hazard.
Yeah. And so there was also just a bunch of stuff under it, like trash and stuff that I
swept up. It's accumulated over the years.
Got all the weeds out of it. Not that the crabgrass isn't immediately going to take over the second it has an opportunity.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. It is the south.
It would be nice to have some green there, even as it is currently just a dugout.
Yeah, we actually, red dirt and clay is the signature of Birmingham.
Yeah.
Which your yard has a
patch of
red square. Yeah, actually. Anyway, so you're out there filling in holes.
Yeah, filled the holes.
Trying to prevent the crabgrass.
Uh-huh. Did that. Mm-hmm. Got my however many bags of trash it took to get all the weeds and the stuff up.
Oh, man. You worked so hard.
Yeah. And so our lovely furry little mascot, Doja, saw something out while she was on the lead because there's no fence.
Yeah, she has to be on a leash. Doja dog.
Yeah. I got wrapped up in the lead and tumbled off of the concrete slab where the back door is and projectiled.
Yeah. Took a dive.
About. And I'm a giant, so it was a long fall.
You're very tall, yes. What are you? 5?
10.
Oh, my God.
So
I always am like, what are you, 5'7"? So tall.
So, yeah. Now I have a sprain in my foot. So I've been.
Your hot girl summer ideas have been postponed.
Although, to be fair, Megan took a bullet to the foot, and she still had Hot Girl Summer.
Mm-hmm. She did. She recovered. She kept going. Resilient. Mm-hmm. You'd be like Megan.
More and more every day, honestly.
Honestly, keep it up. Keep it up.
Yep.
I'm proud of you. Mm-hmm. Well, Jessica, I hate to tell you something.
Oh.
I have come so close to my Hot Girl Summer.
Oh.
My dream, my high was hit the same weekend that your low.
My low. Was that my lowest?
Yes. Yes, it was. I accomplished my dream of going to the Smoky Mountains, as we discussed in a previous episode.
Yes.
I did not break my leg.
Okay.
However,
well, there's no books to bring with you that time, so it's
there were no books. There was, however, gin. So this was the part of the Hot Girl Summer I was not imagining.
The gin.
Okay. Well, what happened is I did a number of miles with a friend of mine. Hot, sweaty. Fun fact. I think I might do a Smoky Mountain episode because I love it so much. But it's technically a temperate rainforest, so it's very, very damp. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all that said, I sweated a lot. Anyway, I had some gin with dinner, which you see me drink. I can have a drink and be fine. But actually what had happened is that we decided to go ahead and hike up the mountain to watch the sunlight rise starting about midnight. So I had dinner and my gin, and I fell asleep in the car. And I woke up very drunk. And it was an accident. And to this day, didn't.
Okay.
And just kept going. I can't believe it. But I had a sunrise on Mount Lecon. We came down. We had a nap, much like my dream. We drove back, had more naps, and then we decided that we were so dirty, and we happened to be camping next to a creek, and Jessica, I did one of the trashiest things I've ever done in my life.
Drunken skinny dip.
Well, I didn't skinny dip with too many people, which is sad, but we did bring some of our special biodegradable soap that will not harm the ecosystem or fish, and I had a bath in the creek.
The dirtiest thing you've ever done is have a...
I said the trashiest thing I've ever done.
Oh. What?
I mean, I just think maybe bathing in a creek, like a, I don't know, frog. I don't know. It just felt trashy.
Okay, but you brought soap.
So. I brought soap. Actually, well, I didn't bring the soap. I had no intention of bathing.
Somebody had soap.
Somebody had soap. I bathed in it like I was Tom Sawyer. But I was clean. But I got this, I sat in my little cold mountain creek after I climbed up the mountain. I had a Sammy. I had a beer. Hot Girl Summer. I've hit my high.
Okay, well.
I'm sorry for you, though.
Solid downward fall for you. I'm on my way back up.
Yeah, I can never. I don't know. Yeah, that's it. That's the high. That's what I did.
Okay.
So, I was really excited. to have hit my high.
A robust weekend.
I know. And this here July month, the high has been hit. So only down from here. We're about to have a cookout, though, which is very summer. Mm-hmm. Cookout at your house would be our first one. Your grill actually just arrived.
Literally, moments ago.
In an aggressive manner, to
quite
be honest.
The drama.
Like 16 doorknobs.
Shout out to Prime Day, though.
Did you get it? Okay, I just learned from TikTok that Prime Day is a scam. Was it a real deal? Well, sometimes it's not a scam.
Yeah, because I had that one sitting in my cart for a hot minute. So I knew what the regular price was.
So what did you? How much did you get off of it, do you think?
I think it ended up being like 37 or 38%.
See, impressive. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
It made up for the size of the box it came in.
It's a giant box.
Yeah.
Comically large.
Yeah. There's two things in it. It's the grill and one book.
Is it a book of recipes?
No, it's...
like a how to use?
No, I got a copy of You Have to Be Prepared to Die Before You Can Live.
About a book for reading. I thought it was a book that came with the grill.
No. And it's about...
It's like a book of recipes, Jessica.
It's like, you can't use this thing?
You can't.
No, can't this one's about using archives and oral histories to cover the stories that aren't told about the Birmingham campaign. And I bought them at the same time, so they shipped together.
I kind of want to read that book.
I will report back.
I love that you are studying more of your craft, Jessica. Mm-hmm. And your, I don't know. It's not really, it is a craft, but it's also like a science. It is a science.
Kind of.
Your field.
Methodology.
And your methodology. You're continuing to study how to be a good historian.
Doing my best.
Yes, because you are a real historian. Yeah. And I am not, famously.
Dicking around.
As is always declared. As is often declared. I am not a real historian. But I am... A student of, or once upon a time, was a student of a certain type of history, which is now both irrelevant to my life and to the general public. Mm-hmm. So that's unfortunate for me.
Well, you got you here.
I got me here in one of my many lives. So I guess we'll just segue into our episode now.
Okay.
Into our content.
Hannah, tell me a story.
I'm going to tell you a story, sort of a story. And then I actually am calling on you to discuss things with me at the end of the story.
Okay.
This is an info sharing and then discussion event.
Oh, a call and response.
A call and response, one could say. So as I hope our listeners listen to our intro episode, because I do think it's a lot of fun. But also it shares about like me and you and why we got the thing. Mm-hmm. What we covered in the intro episode is... although this is a history podcast, I am not a trained historian. But I am actually a trained theologian.
Which is the same.
Which is the
same. One could argue the Bible is just a textbook.
One could argue, which is an argument I sort of make tonight.
Oh, foreshadowing. Sorry.
See, it's because we're so in tune with each other. Mm. But I'm not necessarily like a person of faith anymore. But theology was one of my many lives. That has been a part of my journey. Mm-hmm. But a big part of that education, becoming a trained theologian, was studying the history of the ancient world in which the Bible was set. And archaeology, which I took several of those classes because I fucking loved it. It was so fun. Very nerdy. And studying Hebrew and Koine Greek. Can you believe that once upon a time, Jessica, you could sit a Hebrew Bible in front of me and I could translate it into English?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Oh, you can believe that? Yeah. Oh, Jessica, that actually means a lot to me.
I feel like you have the brain for languages.
I really enjoyed it. It was like one of those Hebrew, I did Koine Greek, which is, I think the Greek after Classic Greek. I can't really remember. But it's the one the New Testament was written in, supposedly. The New Testament. Some people take issue with calling it that. But I liked the Hebrew. It felt very instinctive. Like, Koine Greek was very technical. So if you knew the rules, you could figure it out. But there was,
in French.
Mm-hmm. There was, an instinct to, Hebrew. So I would know what something was, but I couldn't really say why. I just kind of, knew. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. I have to be honest, though. If you took the alphabet in front of me, I could probably not tell you all of it. But I think I could figure it out. But
all right. So no bat mitzvahs for you.
No. Won't be sitting in... A bot mitzvah translating for you now.
All right.
Just gonna be digging around. Much like now. Yeah. But we are also recording from the South, where Christianity is very embedded in this culture. I don't know if it's still like this, but Birmingham, where we are, as of a few years ago, had more churches per capita than any other city, urban center in the world. Not the world, the country. Maybe the world. but I don't think so.
Per capita, maybe.
A lot of churches in Birmingham. It's an incredible, we're very dense in it. So what I wanted to do as we're doing this podcast based in history, it's been something I've been thinking about of like, if the Bible is kind of a product of its location and its time, is in some sense a textbook, and in some sense kind of remarks on historical events and locations and things of the ancient world, you know, and you're a trade historian for like, what is it, 20th century history, you know, what are ways that history's done badly that might have negative ramifications for how you perceive an event or a person and carries forward in a culture in a way that's like kind of unanticipated, but kind of long suffering. So I've been thinking about this dichotomy between like your training and my training and like where we might land on something that's very similar from these two different timelines. So I'm going to walk through a person from the Bible whose whole identity has been really altered by the church doing history badly. I'm going to say like doing history is like research, was like in some sense researching or taking it up front and then creating an interpretation of it and then sharing it as though that's like an actual fact. And normally we tell a story, but I'm like a little technical spiel and then maybe we have like a little discussion of like stuff from like your experiences and what's similar and what you think. So I'm kind of interested in like your context as we kind of go through this, we talk about this. So it's a lot, but I hope, and maybe we can share with our, if we can do all that and we have a little bit of time, maybe I'm wondering if we can share with the listeners like how we might get to our episodes from like an idea to like researching well to like sharing something as well. So Jessica, can we do all that in like 50 minutes? Probably.
Well, we're at 9 minutes right now.
Oh, so. God. Can we do it in 40 minutes? We're going to do it. Okay. First, when I'm talking about the Bible, I'm not trying to make any claims. I'm not saying it's true. I'm not really even saying, like, I'm not going to eat claims about Jesus being real or anything that he did. We're just talking about what the Bible says is true and what church and church leadership believed and treated as true. Because that's really all that matters here, is that they believed it and had made decisions about it, and biblical scholars have. So I'm really using all that to talk about how unfounded historical claims create problems in unanticipated ways. So the person we're talking about today is a woman who was called Mary Magdalene. She appeared in the Greek scriptures, specifically in the Gospels. The Gospels are the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And they're the four collective stories of Jesus's time on earth from a little bit before he was born, and a few, to like after he died, went to heaven, like those initial acts. So that's what those are. And that's where we meet Mary Magdalene. When Jesus was 30 years old, according to the Bible, he starts his ministry. So he travels, he's preaching, I'm the Son of God. He preaches his general message of, like, love.
How does he know?
He just does. He awoke to it.
Well.
He grew into stature and the will of God. But it does make me wonder, because I've imagined, like, because Jesus had, like, siblings. And so I imagine like at the dinner table, like Mary's telling the Lord.
It's a really tough Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Can you imagine the story that's being shared? She's like, oh, he calls Joseph dad, but like, oh, not that dad actually. Like I have imagined the dinner table feeling odd.
Mm-hmm.
But I've wondered, because I think he, you know, he awakens to himself,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a valid journey for like a little teenager. We all awaken a little bit as we grow to who we are. But also there's a scripture after he was born that Mary takes things and she hides them in her heart. So, like, there's an awareness that... So, I'm wondering... in my own sense of imagination, did Jesus awaken to who he was? And how much did his mother, like, instruct him? Just makes me curious.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all we got. Jesus grew into... What do you call it? Wisdom, stature, and the will of God? Something like that. Knowledge of good... of God and man? Something like that. It's a Bible verse. That I apparently still remember a little bit of. Did you hear me quote the Bible just then?
Uh-huh.
Amazing. But, where was? Oh, so he preached the message of God. He, and he started to gather followers. So Jesus goes on a journey. And it's like a little bit of a hero's journey. You know, you go when you gather your people. So he goes and he gathers 12 men to follow him. And they're being prepared and taught and like, mentored is a good word, by Jesus to like continue his ministry, because Jesus knows he's not going to be around.
Are these men the same age? Is it like a peer-to-peer situation?
I think they're all, I mean, yeah, they're all like described as like sons of people. So I would think like 30s, 40s. But if you are like fisher people, there's like a tax collector. There's Judas, who I think his entire livelihood was betrayal, apparently. And
somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. Jesus was like, that's him right there, end of the table. He's like, the dude who just left, Judas, you see him go? That was him, the betrayer. Can you imagine? I mean,
Judas the Betrayer is just like the hardest hairband title ever.
Can you believe? Can you imagine? We've discussed Jesus being like, I'm God's son, everyone, just, at the dinner table. And now all of Jesus.
I'm just picturing like every time Judas the Betrayer comes into the room, there's just like a sick guitar riff. In the background.
Sick guitar riff. I'm imagining every meal with Jesus being weird. He's got 12 random.
Does he know these men ahead of time?
He did not. He walked along the dock one day. He was like, yo, Peter, throw your net on the other side of the boat. You're having a bad day. Peter was like, I know what I'm doing, Jesus. Okay. And then Jesus was like, just fucking do it, man. And then they pulled up so many fish, it almost sucked their boat. And they were like, God damn. They got to follow.
Wow.
Apparently, that was a slip. But they jumped out of their boat and were like, yo. And then Jesus was like, how about you be fishers of men? Which I'm pretty sure a Baptist man wrote because they love that shit. It's twisted around. But anyway, and so they followed Jesus. And so that's, I think, actually, according to the Bible, he just went around and was like, how about you follow me now? So and then they just did.
Was Judas like a vegan?
I actually don't know. I don't think that the story of Judas being called to follow Jesus is actually in the Gospels. I think he appears here and there always as the bad guy. He was the keeper of the coins. And so there was a hint that he was like a thievery.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think maybe he was a moonlighter of being the ferryman and picking up all the pennies?
It's possible. It could have been a nighttime thing. Yeah. But you know how like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette always have a villain storyline?
No.
Okay. It does. There's always a villain in the
season. I take
seasons.
That back. I watched that one season with Matt James.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the villain. Mm-hmm. And the hero.
Yeah.
Because his relationship with his mom was not acceptable behavior.
No. It was uncomfy, shall we say. And then I think he might have gotten engaged to who turned out to be the villain. And then re-engaged to her.
Yeah, after her. I'm from the South. We have cotillion parties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rough stuff.
Yeah. I think they're still together. I see them on Instagram.
I actually think they are. But Jesus had a villain story. Not Jesus, but there was a villain. A foil, shall we say, to his goodness.
It would not be a book of lessons if there was not a villain.
You got to have a villain. There's got to be somebody like, okay, mm-hmm. That guy the whole time. But I kind of wonder if the disciples looked back with some clarity. They were like, we misread Judas. So this could actually come into a Judas hater episode with his sick guitar riffs. Not for you, though. I think you're enjoying this. But
I'm immediately on his side. He can do no wrong.
Judas. Betrayer.
Since the beginning of time, people have had to have a side hustle, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's getting his coins. He got them from, I believe, some rich ladies because Jesus had a problem. Not really a problem, but he was a poor motherfucker.
Fundamentally is a problem.
Yeah. His dad was a carpenter. His mom was just a lady. So he didn't have any money. And they, once upon a time, apparently from the Bible says some wise men or astrologers, as some say, visited them because they followed a star and gave them a bunch of gold and stuff. But then they were refugees in, like, Egypt for a while. And I would think that's an expensive experience. So the assumption is that money was gone. But I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe he was just, I don't know, conning some women. But
maybe he's a ladies' man. Who's to say?
Well, some people say.
I say.
But he was, he's a human person. So he has to eat and sleep and usually wear clothes. So he actually had a band, a gaggle.
All the wine
say.
He could ask for, though.
He could make that, though. So he was fine. Mm-hmm. Didn't pay for that shit. Just put his finger in. Good. I actually do have wondered if he's put his, how he did that.
Make the wine?
Do you have to cough? What was the change like? You know, did you put your finger in? Did you have a sip? And it just, as it touched your lips, turned to wine? How did it happen?
I want to know how did he discover the skill?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Well, I think, again, this is why I'm wondering if his mother instructed him. Because she was like, fix this party. They're out of wine. Everyone's stressed out. And he was like, Mom, it's not my time yet. And then she looked at all the servants and she was like, y'all just do what he says. So she was like, it is time, though. It's time right now. So I feel like his mother pulled it out of him some. And it's actually a very wholesome little moment. because Mary was like, it is time, though, actually. Time right now. Let's, you know, fix the situation, which is hilarious to me. But he couldn't afford food. He could make the wine. Actually, he could make food, too. He does do that later. But he had a group of wealthy women. Because, and which is like, the Bible, I think, puts it as like they gave out of their resources. But there are women who traveled with Jesus and the 12, basically supporting their travels and their ministry. And so Mary Magdalene is one of these women. And that's like the first time she's mentioned. I think it's like Luke 8 that she's mentioned with a few others. And like, we know, we kind of know practically, like, they need money. They need food. They probably need clothes. I mean, they're with together for like 3 years. I imagine, I mean, they're nice that they're like in the mountains. So I'm sure they're sleeping outside some, but also they need an inn. And we know that like later on, Jesus has the disciples go ahead to like get an inn to go and secure a room for them. So like that pattern is kind of there. So I'm wondering if the women may have also like traveled ahead of Jesus and the 12, gotten things ready for them. But they had like the resources and like the luxury to not have to be at home, like living life. Mm-hmm. They could travel with them and they could support. So like the assumption is, they're just wealthy people. And Mary Magdalene is one of these women who travels with them. And
it's giving cult.
Is giving cult. Which is obviously, the Bible says it. Nothing we can do about that. No. I can understand how that perception is there.
But if you are looking for a written justification to have a cult,
there.
It's present.
You know, I have a cult episode I'm doing soon. So this actually, do I have a pattern? Maybe. Did I just learn something about myself? But we know three things about Mary when she's first introduced.
Okay.
She's wealthy.
Yeah.
She has seven demons. And Jesus threw them out. And that's why she loves Jesus.
Are they the same as the sins?
No, I'm not sure. And actually, we'll talk about this in a minute, like what the demons could have been.
Oh.
But why you don't really, why we don't really know. And she's from the town of Magdala, which is why she's creatively called Mary Magdalene. Real original.
A man wrote this book.
A man wrote this book, and there were honestly so many Marys. And so I can understand why he had to describe her as is that. Because Joanna is just Joanna. Like, there are like multiple Marys in Jesus' life. So they'd call him that. But here's the issue. Because in some sense, the Bible is a product of its time. You could read it as like a textbook or like something to go alongside of like other research and other ancient writings and stuff. But it's also like, if you're a Christian coming to it, it's a very like spiritual book as well. And you're not necessarily going to read it as a history book. And it's not trying to be a history book. Like, it's not, I don't know. What is that famous guy that wrote like a big old history? We get a lot of our stuff from him. I should know this from my theology days, but I don't. I knew that one Bible verse, but not this. But there was a dude, Demetrius or something. I don't know. I just made that shit up, actually. Demetrius back then. I'm going to think of it later. It's going to come to me. But there was a man who did write very detailed histories, and we get a lot of our information about the ancient world from him. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I thought you meant like a current guy, because no. My answer was Ken Burns.
No. I meant like an old guy.
I got it.
From the ancient world. That's why, okay. I said Demetrius. Is that why you made that face at me when I said Demetrius?
I like you said, I said Demetrius, like I'm going to know what the hell that means.
Like Demetrius, it just feels like Demetrius was a common name back then, like Mary. Like, okay. I actually don't think the historian's name was Mary, but it's not like, you know, it's not it was not written to be a history book. It was written to be a spiritual book and a guide to, I don't know, life and Jesus. I don't know. But the majority of the book is not even like a narrative. Most of the books in the Bible are poetry, technically, and so can't really take it literally. It's not very meant to be taken literally. I don't think some Christians and scholars would disagree with that, but that's what I'm saying, and I'm on the podcast, and they aren't, so I can say that.
Flex.
When start your own podcast, make your own claims.
But much like the Bible.
When Christians sort of come to the Bible and like study it and like teach it and like you read it in a way that you're trying to pull or like understand some type of eternal truth from it. You know, it's a book that gives meaning to your life. It gives you an understanding of who God is, gives an understanding of who you are. You treat it as it's a spiritual experience. It's not necessarily meant to be factual. It's grounded in fact, but it's not meant to be, I don't know, a textbook necessarily in the way that you're treating it. So when you come to like someone like Mary Magdalene, well, you know, like three things about her, and only one of those things is even like a little bit objective. like, her history kind of becomes also a spiritual interpretation of that text. Well, like, Jesus had these women followers. Like, you know, what does this mean for, like, life? It's like that. And maybe it doesn't mean anything, but maybe you're curious about it. So, but we only kind of know the two things about her. So if you're trying to, like, figure out shit about Mary Magdalene, you don't really have anything to go off of. So you know that she's wealthy. That's only what you can assume. But you don't, at least a bunch of questions. Where did her money come from? Does she have a husband? Why does she have her own money?
Wealthy, or like comparatively speaking to Jesus wealthy?
I don't know. She's wealthy enough that she doesn't have to be home working. And she has enough money that she can like give it away and also sustain herself traveling.
Okay.
Which feels like wealthy, right? Like, I mean,
probably for the time. Yeah.
Like, I mean, and also like even today, could you just like stop working and travel about from your savings? I mean,
what's a savings?
I mean, we're millennials, Jessica. Do we know? No. But I don't know if they did. And then she has seven demons. But like, what the fuck does that mean? Was it really seven? Or was this number sort of representative of like...
they don't ever talk about what... are they number. Like physical demons?
That's what I'm wondering.
Demons?
That's the question. Because like, there's a man who's like kind of... There's multiple stories of Jesus is casting out demons. But some of them are like... There's a man who's like chained up in a graveyard. Well, obviously he's crazy. You know, that's hard. But it's kind of like Jesus cast the demons out of him. But like, was he mentally ill? And that's the language they have.
I feel deeply in my bones that if there is a man chained to a graveyard, leave him.
Yeah. I think he said Jesus went and got him. He put his demons into pigs. Actually, it might have been a cave. I might be making up the graveyard
that's
part. That's why he's Jesus. He dove right in.
Not me.
That's what Jesus does. I would have left that man. But so it's like, was it a real demonic thing? Do we, you believe in these like spiritual forces, or was it like, was a mental illness at play? You know, like schizophrenia when you're like, when they don't have the language for like what's happening.
Oh, we've taken.
So that's okay. What I'm wondering.
See, I'm thinking about them in the context of like, is this why people have specifically seven deadly sins?
Like, it could be, and it could be like a number.
Like really like desserts.
It could be like gluttony, but the Bible doesn't even talk about seven deadly sins.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, could one come from the other? Because seven is just so specific.
It is very specific. And I think, like, seven, like, a lot of numbers represent other things in the Bible. Like, there's a lot of back and forth of, like, you see numbers pop up and stuff like that. So I don't really know. Some people say, like, sevens represents, like, a wholeness. Kind of like the seven-day week where Sunday kind of rounds it all out, you know? Or Saturday, depending on... how you understand it. People argue about that, too. But, we don't really know. But she had some experience where she experienced Jesus as, like, rescuing her from a situation. And so that kind of won her some loyalty. Right. So that was her experience of Jesus.
And who am I to invalidate?
I mean, you know. But then she was called, and she pops up a few other times. Her name is almost always first. I think if one time it's not. I think Mary, the mother of Jesus, was first, which they had to say because there's so many fucking Marys. And so that kind of suggests, like, she was the leader of the women. Maybe.
Mother Mary, one could argue.
I mean, Mother Mary. But also, like, do we know that for sure? That's also just that's also a guess that we're making. You know, like, there's no way to say that for certain. There's no rule in the ancient world where the most important person in a group goes first. I mean, maybe it was alphabetical order. We don't know. And, well, I guess Joanna would have gone first. You don't think we alphabet.
It just sort of feels like maybe since the dawn of people, women have just kind of been tossed to the wayside and maybe we shed some details.
Maybe we should. And this is the point of today with poor old Mary Magdalene. But the only objective thing we know is that she's from Magdalene. We'll learn about her. But to learn about that town, we've got to go outside the Bible. So we've got to go to archaeology. We've got to go to other ancient texts. We've got to go to old maps, all that kind of stuff to figure out what the heck that town was. And it just, you know, it doesn't even shed any context on, like, we're gonna find a story of Mary when she was a child in Magdala. I mean, she's just going to be like, it's just something we can learn about her. But like, the issue is that we just said, and she's a woman, you know, there's 12 men. They get top billing in the life of Jesus across the Greek scriptures. They end up being leaders in the church. They all die mostly in horrible ways. And most of them write something, a book in the New Testament that comes out. And Mary Magdalene, though, being a woman.
It's like the Sarah Mass books. She just keeps pumping them out.
Just
a quart of something.
Just one after the other. Same themes, just slightly changing the spicy scenes.
New Crescent City.
But honestly, I have recently learned I do like a rom-com with spicy moment. Because I read them when I run. Which means, when I read them when I run, I mean listen to them when I run. Basically the same thing. Probably. Yes, much like Sarah Mouse. They're just like popping them out. And they all say similar things.
Yeah. yeah, they do.
And slightly different alter styles. So, like Peter, not a great writer.
Oh, no. He's
having a hard time.
It's just the 12 disciples that are basically writing Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yeah, sort of. And then you got Paul, who's a real standout.
Yeah.
Who wasn't even a disciple. Like,
the resurrection is really just that one where Mario Lopez gets kidnapped for the entire movie.
Just a standout. from the rest. But Mary creates a problem for the early church. And that is because when Jesus gets arrested, Jesus betrays him. Peter's like, I'll never fucking do that, Jesus. And Jesus is like, you're about to. And then Peter does. And then he doubles down. And then he triples down.
I'm feeling confident this is just the plot of Vanderpump Rules.
I mean, did they get it from the Bible, though?
Well,
maybe.
If not a table of 12 homies.
I have no idea. I've never seen that.
Is it not just the back alley behind a Los Angeles West Hollywood restaurant where they're all sleeping with each other? I'm just saying.
It could
betrayal
be.
Looks I haven't, the same.
I have not seen that movie, but I bet a listener could tell us if that is true
someone
or not.
Will someone identify me.
Someone okay. Validate Jessica, please. But all the disciples run away except John, who is called John the Beloved. He actually calls himself that in his gospel.
I have to tell you.
He said, yo, I'm Jesus' favorite.
As someone who has known and dated a number of Johns, they all act like that.
Just how John, they all got it from their common ancestor. John the Disciple, mm-hmm. otherwise known as John the Beloved. But actually, it's fair because he stayed at the cross. And John also, this is beside the point, but John records that when he and Peter, which I don't think he names himself in it, but we all know, when he and Peter hear that Jesus is alive, they all run to the tomb. And then he says of himself that he outran Peter to the tomb.
Like I said.
He's like,
all Johns are alike.
He said, the other disciple who shall remain nameless outran Peter to the tomb. And it's so goddamn funny. And I love it. But all of them betray Jesus and leave, except all the Marys stay and Joanna. But Mary Magdalene is the first person to see Jesus in his resurrected form, which the core of the gospel is.
Can you imagine?
She didn't recognize him. She thought he was a gardener.
He just crawls out of a grave, just bloody and like, where the hell am I?
Apparently he was glowing and looked totally different.
Oh, great. Yeah,
he looked anew. But he also been like, I think he hadn't been like cleaned very well, actually. His little body hadn't. They were in a hurry because of the Sabbath. So they came back to finish the cleaning job and the spices, and then he wasn't there. And everybody was in distress. So Mary stayed outside the tomb crying. Jesus appears. She thinks he's the gardener. So he has to be like, I am Jesus. And then she goes up to hug him, and he's like, it's not time yet, which is hilarious. And
like a weird time to set a boundary.
I know. She's been traveling with him for so long.
Okay. I think the least you could like, do since I've been standing here crying
over
your ass.
I've been sobbing. You were dead. I pulled your dead body off a cross, man. And he's like, no, it's not time.
Don't touch me, bro.
Don't time for hugs right now. It is not that moment. And he tells her to go run and tell everybody else. But it's a big deal in the church because the gospel is that Christ has died. Christ has risen. Christ will come again. And so, like, she's the first person to say, Christ is risen. And so she's literally the person that carries that.
She is the Paul Revere.
She is the Paul Revere. She has seen the resurrected Christ, which makes her an apostle. She goes and carries that message to everybody else. But that comes a problem because a woman held this news first. And in the ancient world, I mean, we're obviously a very patriarchal world, but as the church grew, leaders like Mary grew as well. So like Lydia started a church. She's named starting a house church. Priscilla was an elder and a teacher. She taught another, his name was Apollos. Very charismatic, handsome man, apparently. But he was saying things wrong. So Priscilla, like, taught him correctly. She was an elder in a church, was a whole office that, like, people argue about whether or not women can be there. Junia is called an apostle, and that's a whole other story of erasure. But, like, pretty quickly in, like, the very first generation of church, like, women are occupying significant roles. There's women deacons, all that kind of stuff. But within, like, a generation, the patriarchy in the church just takes off. And then we start to encounter people having a problem with Mary. And like, who was this woman? And, like, they have an issue. They have an issue with Mary being the person to, like, say this thing. And, of course, like, Jewish patriarchy existed as well. So some, like, stories around Mary's history started, like, surfacing right around this time. So, like, a couple of claims were made, like, the Talmud, which is, like, was, like, an ancient Jewish commentary, like, in its most basic form, talks about Magdala, like, the town. And it claims that the city was a city of ill repute. Do you remember Katrina when it hit New Orleans and everybody, all the conservative Christians were like, it's because they were so depraved. It's God's judgment. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And that's actually what the Talmud claims about Magdala. It was so depraved, it was destroyed.
So they were the Ninth Ward?
Apparently.
Well.
But actually, we know from ancient history that Magdala was just a small little town on the northwestern Sea of Galilee, and it was known for its salted fish. It's just so wholesome. it's so random. But the Romans destroyed it during the first Jewish-Roman War. It was around 70 AD when it was destroyed, because the war was like 66 to 74, I think. Yes, 66-74. And we know this because in the second century, the town moved a little north. Like, the town had been raised and then it shifted as it was rebuilt. So archaeologists have discovered, like, the first century layer of the town. And we know that it was, like, a Jewish location because they discovered a synagogue. And I think as recently as, like, 2021, they discovered another synagogue. They've discovered, they call it the Magdala Stone, but it's, like, a menorah, which is the 7 instead of the 9, like, was carved into the stone. I don't know how to explain that to you.
What is the sevens?
I mean, I'm telling you, 7 demons, 7 this. That's why I don't think it was a literal number of demons. I mean, she's counting them.
You know, I'm something of a woo-woo.
You're a woo-woo. What do you think with your woo-woo? Is there an angel? It's got to be an angel number 7.
Yeah.
I wonder what it is.
I don't know that information off the top of my head.
We will look this up.
But I'm just saying, it's following her around a lot.
There's a lot of sevens involved. Oh, but also, but anyway, among the artifacts on the building discovered, the first century version of town was Jewish occupants.
Okay.
And it was destroyed in a war.
Of course it was.
Which is maybe the depravity and not the prostitutes. But also, it's a city on the Sea of Galilee and prostitution is the oldest. What am I trying to say? Job? Vocation? Mm-hmm. Vocation. I mean, in the book. And so, well, I mean,
it's the oldest job and it has survived many recessions. Mm-hmm. So
it is, as we say, depression proof.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be doing fine. But so anyway, I think where was maybe the depravity?
Yeah.
And that is what took out the town. Mm-hmm. Just to say. But that's what, but all that, it still doesn't tell us anything about Mary. Like, knowing about the town, just give context for her life and, like, where she came from. Jesus was, like, all over fucking Galilee. So of course they met. But the Talmud and the Christians, as the Christians started pushing back on the women taking leadership roles, they kind of got a thing, and they just kept it going. So before there's another contextual thing before Mary and the other women are mentioned in Luke 8. As a part of studying the Bible too, is you look at its direct context, literary context. You look at the passage before, you look at the passage after, to see if it can help you understand. And I can't remember the official name of it, but there's a method for interpreting the Bible where you let the Bible interpret itself. So if you've got, like, a reference, like, 7, you might go look somewhere else. Or, like, Paul, he quotes...
It's like a choose-your-own-adventure story.
It is. Like, Paul quotes the Hebrew scriptures a lot. So you got to go back and look at those and understand those and then bring all that back into, like, what Paul is writing. For example, so directly before the mention of Mary for the first time, a little lady comes in to Jesus. He's having a meal with the Pharisees, like a religious leader of the time in the Jewish faith. She comes in. She's crying. She's got her hair down. You know, scandalous. She pours out an expensive bottle of perfume on Jesus' feet. It's a very sexual moment. Because what she does is she starts crying, and then she starts drying his feet with her hair. It's very shocking.
Okay.
And scandalous. And not a little bit sexual. I do think some Christian pastors have avoided saying that part. But
Who am I to kink shame?
I mean, not kink shaming at all. I think it's a thing that a lot of Christians avoid saying. But, like, a woman pouring perfume, weeping on Jesus' feet, and drying his feet with her hair. very sexual time. And that is what's happening. And so it's a very shocking scene. Judas is mad because he's like, look at her wasting all that money. She could have given it to us because he was stealing the money. And so then, like, they put that little parenthesis and they read along the story. Because several gospels have this story. And we actually think that might have happened twice. Like, some woman did it. Another woman was like, oh, good idea. Like, she did it. Okay. Or it could have been a story that repeated itself.
If I had a nickel for every time.
I know. You'd have two nickels.
I'm not saying it's weird, but it's strange that it happened twice.
I know. It's like, it's maybe like one more nickel than you should have had. Or maybe two more nickels. But because that happens directly before the story of Mary and her demons, people are like, oh my God, is this unnamed woman Mary? Which is a connection that actually makes no sense.
Okay.
Because I think Mary was named often. And I think they would
feel like first to be a wealthy woman, you would not be walking around wasting an entire bottle of perfume on some guy's feet.
You would think so. You would think so. And I would think if a person really appreciated perfume, like you appreciate a perfume. Mm-hmm. I do not. Remember that time you told me how much a bottle of perfume cost? Like, and I was like, yeah, stunned.
It's Baccarat Rouge.
What you would not do ever, Jessica.
Pour an entire bottle of Baccarat Rouge on some white guy's feet.
Never. Yeah. Never. I think I have to say that's a lady who's never put a lot of money into a perfume before action. Mm-hmm. I think maybe I wouldn't do that because my hair is very short. And that's the thing stopping me from wiping my, actually, my hair is too short to do that.
That would be body spray behavior.
That's body spray behavior. Just body spray behavior. Anyway, that's what she did. And people were like, oh, that's obviously Mary. So basically these two narratives create this narrative of like Mary was probably a hypersexual lady, even though none of that makes any sense.
Okay, but like, what if she was?
Well, she could have been. It is fine. But what happened is, okay, so there's a common perception of Mary that sort of is kind of pervasive. Like, people just kind of start assuming this about Mary after she dies, that she's, you know, probably a prostitute, super sexual. That's just what she is. But they use that to exclusion, though, of, like, her carrying the gospel of Jesus around. Like, she wasn't the first person to see him and do all this. What are you about to ask?
Is this the version of Mary that Madonna uses in Like a Virgin?
I do think so, yes.
Where she picks Basquiat Jesus?
I don't know, but that sounds right. Because I obviously not seen that, listened to it.
Is Can't it? Wait to show that to you on the immediate stop of this episode.
I'm probably going to say yes. But it's still just kind of like the story of her that's kind of like floating around. It's still just kind of a loose perception. It's not like...
They've bastardized her.
Yeah, they've bastardized her. And it's not like a... But it's not set in stone until a few hundred years later, we get to a pope.
Oh, okay.
So we're just going to skip a few hundred years. Okay. Mary's dead.
All right.
Jesus is
long
gone.
Long dead.
Long dead. But her legacy remains, shall we say, as a prostitute, as a begging lady in bed, and also just filling people's feet. So that's what she does. Okay. That is the assumption of her. But it's not
sorry,
like...
Sorry, I have to derail for just a second. Okay. I keep seeing this picture on the internet. Of things at the Vatican.
Okay.
Is it true that they have her skull on display?
Oh, probably. That's probably not her skull, though. I don't think so. I do think the Catholic... I worked in a Catholic school for a while. I do love Catholics. But I do think the obsession with bones is weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's odd, and I wish they hadn't done that. Nevertheless, they did.
I feel there's a number of things the Catholics could do less.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the grave robbing...
Oh, I was. I was gonna say
yeah. The other thing as well. I was gonna lead up to that.
Maybe. I mean, grave robbing. There's not much you can do about that. There is one thing you could very much not do. Mm-hmm.
There's a thing. We all know what it
is. You could do less of that.
Mm-hmm. That one activity, y'all could cut that shit out.
Yeah.
And while you're at it, maybe just start owning your shit.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. We're gonna take Pope Gregory the First.
Okay.
To town for being a damn idiot. So he lived around like 540 to 604, and he was pope. He wasn't pope for like long. I think less than 10 years, I think. But he preached a series on Mary Magdalene, which is fascinating. He was able to do that because there's four things we know about her. In 591, and this is where Gregory just makes up fucking shit. Because also at the time, the Bible printing's all expensive. People don't have Bibles. Even if illiteracy wasn't just like a widespread issue for almost everybody. So like people just got the filtered Bible, through like popes and priests, and like it trickled down, bishops and stuff. So like whatever he says,
Reaganomics strike again.
It's just the trickle down effect. And whatever he says is just accepted as the actual gospel truth. So he preaches a sermon. It's a very flowery. It's like, honestly, it's a bunch of stupid shit he said. He preaches homily. He called homily 33 because
sounds fake.
They just numbered their sermons instead of giving them fun creative names. it's giving Mary called Magdalene. She's from Magdala. But he just stood there in his own authority. It was like, I guess popes just get to do that. They get to say shit. He just
stood there in his own authority.
He just stood there, just full of his own self-importance, and was like, I'm making it official now. He addresses the crowd. He says, it is clear, brothers. So he addresses all the men in the crowd. And let me tell you, I have said under many a sermon, not many because I left, where men just stood up there and addressed the men in the room, and nothing good follows. Ever. And he was just like, Mary was a prostitute, y'all. That woman, he poured Jesus on perfume.
Talk about poured it, the Judas.
Poured Jesus on perfume. Poured perfume on Jesus. That's her. Prostitute. Only prostitutes do shit like that. Can you imagine? He just stood up there and said that. I'll post the whole quote on Instagram because it's really boring to read. I don't want to read it right now. But he says, brothers. Like, he fucking knows that he's addressing the men in the room.
Like he's Hulk Hogan.
And he's like, I'm officially, and he knows, it's like he knows that it's benefiting him and everybody else, all the men in the room, to just say this.
It's pandering.
Like, he knows it's going to be, and this, like, this just fucking stays. Like, if I Googled Magdalene House, because I think the first one was established, like, a few hundred years later, the first one recorded, and it rescued, like, prostitutes from a life of prostitution, I guess. But if you Google Magdalene House, like, it's just full of people just, like, women rescues. Which is fine, because she was a woman who experienced rescuing. But it's just, it's become, like, she's synonymous with it. If you look back at, like, the medieval and, like, Renaissance portraits and stuff, depictions of Mary, she's, like, she's naked, or she's super sexual, she's a very sensual-appearing woman. Like, it becomes just, like, pervasive. And, like, Jesus Christ Superstar, I guess Madonna, too, I don't know about that. But I apologize. But like 2 Easters ago, let me tell you what I did two Jesus Easters ago.
Christ, superstar.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch that. I just read that it was a sexual depiction of Mary Magdalene. Can you confirm?
I can't. It's just that Jesus Christ Superstar and Madonna, I did not anticipate being in the same
sentence.
Well,
it's like together. A movie, and I think it does depict Jesus and Mary having like a sexual relationship. Which, I mean, I don't know if they, I mean, I'm not judging if they did. It's just sort of like, we don't know that they didn't. And we do know this one thing about her that's actually very important to church history that everybody's just glossing over and pretending it didn't happen. And is pretending it's not significant. Let me tell you what I did a few Easters ago, Jessica. And that's ruin our family Easter dinner. Because one of my sister's pastors claimed that Mary was a prostitute. And I had a fucking meltdown about that. Because it's like, and it's not like, I don't, not that there's anything wrong. Like, I don't, if she was, that's fine.
Yeah, if there's evidence to back it up.
There's evidence to back it up, but you can't make a claim, and especially can't make a claim that it's true when doing so is diminishing her actual legacy, which actually a lot of women would be really inspired by and maybe would be pursuing positions of power in the church, and you want to make sure women don't. Because the early church was a place where women could have options, because you could come and serve the church and be supported by the church, and then, like, maybe you didn't have to get married. Maybe it gave you some options, and it gave you some freedom, because whether or not you believe in Jesus and believe the Bible and believe all these things, we know that in the first century, the church began, and it was something entirely new, and it had the chance to define roles in a really unique way. And we see that kind of argued in the Bible of, like, the rich and the poor came together, and there was conflict coming out of that because the wealthy did not mesh well with the poor and had to, like, make some changes to like, be able to integrate these two very different experiences and realms of life. And so, like, there was a chance in the church to say, the women can be whatever it is that they are here, follow their own gifting, follow their own desires, but that started being tamped out immediately. And it could have been a thing where, like, Mary was the first person. She did stay at the cross when all the men left. Like, these women have some leadership qualities. She did support Jesus for, like, 3 fucking years when he was traveling the countryside. But they, like, tamped that down. But to me, like, it's, like, women can choose what they do with their bodies. But, like, you can't make claims for women's, you can't claim something from a woman's door that's not hers. That's really mistreating this woman. But I think it's really genuinely trickled down from, because that was the foundation of the church, mm-hmm. started by denying this first woman really what she actually did. And I think that's trickled down, and it's ended up embedded in parts of culture where, like, you know, these men are still preaching this as though it's true, because, like, it's just a common perception that it's true when it's not. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, for me, it's, like, an example of, like, from my own discipline where something has just really negatively affected hundreds and hundreds of years of history and the way women experience to see themselves, you know, in a pretty famous book and a pretty famous story. And I think this ended up being really, really harmful. But that, to me, that's someone not doing history well in a context where people are treating this book as spiritual and not history. Like, you've got to be able to blend those two things. But if you tell stories in, like, a lazy, thoughtless way, like, how negatively that can be taken. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, Jessica?
I think I hate to call her a trendsetter.
A trendsetter.
But in remembering and choosing to forget things that actually happen and things that, like, make for a good salacious headline. Mm-hmm. She is the first of a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe sits at the top of my brain almost immediately.
Oh, yeah. That's a good, yeah.
The Black Dahlia.
Mm-hmm.
Fannie Lou Hamer.
Yeah. So, like, there's, like,
Britney Spears.
Ah, poor Britney. But there's, like, a long legacy of sacrificing a story for, like,
mm-hmm.
like a headline.
Yeah.
Or, like, a gasp moment.
Because I recognize the bias from which I'm about to say the thing that's going to come out of my mouth. But if you're trying to sell a Bible,
mm-hmm.
you got to have, like, a wow factor headline.
Yeah.
And why would you do that against a single man in the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
When you could just pick a woman.
You pick one woman out of all the men in the Bible. Because it is kind of a patriarchal book. It's mostly about men.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, like, there's plenty of, like, nut stories in there. We don't have to make shit up. I'm gonna make shit up. But if you're gonna.
Because it's not that long ago that I just sent you a random text message at the crack ass of dawn asking about a whole lot of foreskins. So.
You did. And I actually am. That is a moment that I discovered I'm still a bit of a nerd about ancient traditions. Things that happen. But I think my first response was, like, because men are you. And I think that's valid.
Mm-hmm.
That's valid. But it's a thing.
Yeah.
But I think. And for us doing, like, you know, as we do this, I think we take a lot of care in, like, the stories that we're telling. And, like,
as best we can.
Telling them as well as we can and willingness to be, like, wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But telling things as they were is really important. And when we don't, yeah, this is just an example of, like, how kind of harmful it can be. And, mm-hmm. what you kind of, when you deny somebody's truth, like, what it ends up lacking.
It seems like this is an instance of, I'm going to make up a poor comparison, but there's you'll see what I mean.
I'm follow you there. Follow you anywhere. Let's do it.
Mary Magdalene in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
In her, maybe in the wake of her time.
Mm-hmm.
And critical race theory.
Mm.
And turning it into something that it was not designed for and it is not
mm-hmm.
meant to do. And just weaponizing the shit out of it.
Yep. And using it to undermine
mm-hmm.
the actual truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a long-held pattern.
Project 2025 is about to do that, too. So.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is. But it's a long-held pattern, and in the case of often, of really harmful patterns that persist across the entire world. The mm-hmm. church was a leader in that, so I don't know. That's something maybe a Christian should reckon with, but I...
Well, I'm not one, so it's not...
I no longer have to do that.
It's not on my plate.
The world's gone. That world's ended for me. But I still have a lot of curiosity and, like, interest on the ancient world. Yeah. I kept all my archaeology books because they're kind of fun.
What a very different introduction to archaeology, but
yeah, I bet.
If you love it, what you love you, it.
Yeah. What did you? What was your introduction? Now I'm curious.
One. Well, they should have made me sign an NDA. Okay, so I had to help out the archaeology department at a previous job, wherein we discovered that the field archaeologist in the Delta had just been absolutely decimating the remains of Native ancestors.
Oh.
And they ended up having to repatriate like 400 and some odd people back to their respective tribes.
Oh. You know, I was really concerned that that story was going to be on those themes, just because that story happens a lot, and that's unfortunate that I was confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I learned a lot about the NAGPRA and the repatriation process, and, like, making every step of it, like, the ceremonial in the best way that you can, though.
Mm. And that actually is a very unique experience for you. Mm-hmm. So I respect that. I cannot imagine many people could add that to their resume. So look at you.
I don't.
No, I wouldn't. But no. Theoretically.
I could.
Could. And theoretically, not many people could.
That's true.
So, proud of you for that.
Yeah. It was a very, I don't want to call it interesting because I think that would be disrespectful to the ancestors with which it had to be repatriated. But
yeah,
taking science and making into it intimate, if not ceremonial practice, was an interesting thing to observe.
Yeah. And I'm sure that shit never should have happened.
No.
But to be able to be there and say, I'm going to do this in the most caring, respectful way.
You'll be shocked to find out this may be not even the worst thing that my man did. Hannah, the emails. The emails between the guy that was perpetrating the crimes against the ancestors to some woman. So many sexual poems from a government email.
Oh, my God.
He's not in that job anymore.
Yeah, mine was mostly theory because I was going to have to, like, travel to the Middle East to actually do archaeology. So it was just all the books. But I love it. It's so fun. Mm-hmm. But that is my story about history done badly and how it can ugly trickle on down. And maybe a few, like, do better church moments. Especially that one pastor. You don't know who you are, but one day you will. Because I'll ruin your Easter dinner, maybe. We don't know. Do you ever say that? If I ever catch you saying...
My gift to you.
If I ever catch you saying that again, you'll hear from me.
My people will call your people.
Which is just me pretending to be my people.
If you enjoyed this, all you hate notes and hot notes, please rate us 5 stars on your favorite listening platform, because we're trying to move up the charts and compete with all these people who are going on world tours and stuff, and we would like to have more people to talk to on the internet.
Mm-hmm. We love our listeners. Also, you can give us a little comment on our Instagram is HaintPod, and you can reach out to us at HaintPod@gmail.com.